And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. Yes, indeed, the Friday edition of the John Gambling Show and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. It's going to be a nice weekend, I guess. A little bit of snow tonight, not amounting to very much, and then rain, and then in the 40s.
All right, you got the sleds all set and the hot chocolate?
You know, the Parks Department does that stuff, but I don't think it, somehow or other, this has been a mild winter, and it's hard to get your mind into snow and things like that. I'm sort of looking towards spring.
All right. Well, keep in mind,
we can have some real snowstorms.
Yes.
We still have another month to go, month and a half.
You're absolutely right. They can be the worst of the entire season. Well, you made it official this week in your op-ed piece in the New York Times. You finally made the decision, or at least it seems definitive, that you will not, as you've been saying, run for the presidency.
Well, as I've been saying all along, not a candidate, not going to run. But I do, all kidding aside, I feel more strongly than ever that the candidates are not addressing the real issues that this country faces. And when they mention them, they just, you know, say, yeah, I'm in favor of motherhood and apple pie. But nobody says, how are you going to get motherhood and apple pie through the legislature? Nobody says, how are you going to pay for motherhood and apple pie? Nobody says the blueberry pie eaters who are probably going to get less, and the pecan pie eaters that are probably going to get less, and the cake eaters that are probably going to get less, how are we going to deal with that? Because if we're going to move money over to apple pie, you know, even if mother likes it, it's a problem. And, you know, I've tried to be very careful in speaking out and first making sure that in this city we are doing what we can to fix the problem, and then we've gone as far as, or in the process of going as far as we can, and then you say to the state and to the city, come on, you've got to do your share, and I don't think that they're doing it yet, and hopefully this will get them to do it.
All right, will you endorse a candidate?
I said in my op-ed piece that in the past I've said I would not because I have to work with whoever gets elected, and I might very well in the end not endorse somebody. On the other hand, if one candidate really speaks out as to how they would solve the country's problems in a way that I don't have to agree with their solutions, but I'm particularly upset that nobody is willing to focus on the solutions. There was a conversation the other day, I didn't see the debate, but the two Democratic candidates were talking about health care, and that is one of the real critical issues for this country. But they talked about how you get insurance for the 45 million who are uninsured, and this plan's my plan's better than your plan. But nobody addressed the issue that half of the diagnosis in this country by doctors are wrong. People, or I think the RAND study showed that half of the people don't get, after they go to the doctor, don't get the appropriate care afterwards that they should have. We spend $3,000 more in this country than they do in most parts of Western Europe. There are 45 countries in the world, mostly in Western Europe, that most of the Western Europe is included in there, that have life expectancies of 3 or 4 years longer than us. So, you know, we're not getting what we, the kind of medical care we need. And in New York City, we really have tried. We focused on prevention, that's smoking cessation and working on obesity and things like that, traffic, reducing traffic deaths and fire deaths. Those things all have to go into reducing the need for health care, and then trying to get programs. We have a nursing program for young mothers and that sort of thing, where we're trying to get people the kind of care before they get sick, young women that are pregnant and babies shortly after they're born. And then I'm talking on Sunday morning, and my I give a little two-minute recorded speech every Sunday morning. And this year, it's this time it's talking about health records. And the other day, I was at an event where we showed off, we have 200 providers, or 1,000 providers, which represent 200,000 patients whose records are now all automated. And the automated records are phenomenal. They reduce the needs for, they reduce disasters first because the pharmacist can now read what the prescription is rather than try to decipher some doctor's handwriting. When the doctor should give you shots and it reminds the doctor about his or her patients as to when they need things. It recommends programs. If, for example, a doctor types in, yes, patient smokes, it gives the doctor some thoughts on how to get the patient to stop smoking, or if they've got diabetes, what appropriate, what best practices are. And it does all of those kinds of things. And we'd like to make this available to everybody in the country. The country's going to have to buy hardware and that sort of thing. But we spend a few trillion dollars a year on healthcare, and this would only cost about $20 billion. So $20 billion sounds like a lot of money, but it's an infantile percentage of the total amount of money we spent. And if we did it, we would make the doctors more productive, make the diagnoses better and the solutions more efficient, and stop errors. And yeah, I don't hear anybody talking about those kinds of things, but we've done it, and hopefully I can convince them to do it.
All right. I've got a lot of questions along these lines. I, for one, am very disappointed you're not going to run for president.
Well, you're nice to say so, John. I'll tell
I think
my mother
because
that.
For exactly the reason you just described, that you and other mayors, and you and I have talked about this many times, are the people with the boots on the ground that have to solve the problems. The people in Washington don't really have
well,
to do it.
Keep in mind we tend to blame the president, whatever that means, for everything. We use the word the president for Washington, or we use Washington for all of the government. I have been reasonably critical of all of Washington, both sides of the aisle and both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, which is the way I describe it, so that, you know, all of them together. But in the end, there is the argument that if you and I care, we should hold our elected officials'
exactly.
feet to the fire and say, hey, you're not doing what I want. I'm not going to vote for you. I'm not going to support you. And people don't do that.
Can you deduce from that logic that we Americans don't really care?
No, I think that, you know, we all are worried about. My girlfriend says it's all about housing and jobs. My house and my job. And in the end, that is right. People are worried about how they're going to feed their family and pay the mortgage and get their kids good education and take their vacation and that sort of thing. And, you know, they sort of depend on their leaders to address the issues that, you know, a little bit complex and that don't have easy solutions. And but that also, when they don't focus on them, they don't ask the tough questions of the elected officials. And it is true that mayors and some governors are focusing on an awful lot of these problems before Washington does. And I think the reason is that, you know, take a look at the mayor of New York City. Every day, or almost every day, you talk to the press and they can ask you virtually anything. And if anything goes wrong in the city, whether the city has anything to do with it or not, you know, Mr. Mayor or Madam Mayor, what are you going to do about it? And then tomorrow, they say, yesterday you said you were going to do something. Where is it? And, you know, that's...
You mean you couldn't pull it out of your hat?
You can't just pull it out of your hat. That, you know, I don't want to overstate that, but there is a much more direct tie between request and delivery of services and the measurement thereof and the accountability thereof at the executive level than there is in the legislature. You know, I always joke about the legislature that legislator says, you know, I'm pro-choice, but not for women. I voted for the war, but not to fund it. They want to be on both sides of every issue. Mayors can't do that. Mayors have to come down on one side of every issue and then deliver. And governors are doing that too. You know, our governor is trying to do that, Spitzer, and a number of things, Corzine, and the governor of Connecticut is trying to do that. So local governors are doing it. Schwarzenegger and Ed Rendell from Pennsylvania are leading the charge. Part of an organization with them on infrastructure. So, and incidentally, those that say we don't have any, all we're doing is yelling, is preaching in the wind, or whatever the expression is, are wrong because, you know, Washington now is listening on infrastructure a little more. Rendell and Schwarzenegger were down there and were saying that if there is another stimulus bill, it should have to do with infrastructure. I've given the speech before. The big thing, if you go back and take a look after the Depression, Roosevelt's real contribution with the all of the WPA projects was partial. A little bit of it was he gave jobs to people who desperately needed them, and that's good. But he made an investment for the next three or four decades because all of the things that were built by the WPA were the infrastructure that let our society grow for, you know, 20, 30 years into the future. And we're not making those investments at a federal level. We're building bridges to nowhere, pork barrel projects, rather than investing in the things the city and the country and the state and the country needs. And so, you know, we have airports where you can't fly in and out of. The delays are so great. We have trains, tracks that won't let high-speed trains go on them. The road system that we built during the Eisenhower years, where he made an enormous investment in infrastructure, are falling apart. But in all fairness to, you know, Rendell and Schwarzenegger and a bunch of other governors the other day, they found the president talking about, well, it shouldn't be in a stimulus bill, but you're right, we should invest in infrastructure and that sort of thing. And when it comes to guns, you know, we have this 250 mayor, I think it's actually up to about 275 mayors that have signed on for the Mayor's Coalition Against Illegal Guns, and I'm going to be in Jacksonville, Florida on Monday morning to talk about this. We're having another regional conference there. The ATF has been more cooperative, and the feds, there's a guy in South Carolina that is suing the city and suing me. He personally, he runs a pawn shop. And we did one of these sting operations, found he was willing to do a straw purchase, a straw sale. He's suing me for slander and the city for slander. And just to show you that there really is a God, a couple weeks ago, as I'm heading to Baltimore for a gun summit, we see a news story coming out. The feds went in and arrested him for selling guns to criminals.
Yeah,
which
I saw
is
the
what
other
we alleged.
Day. I saw the other day he asked the judge if he could put that trial on hold because he's got to go to another trial. Anyway,
my point is all of this stuff does make a difference. Can I look at you and say, John, we gave one speech arguing the candidate should face one issue or the Fed should do something or the state should do something and then say, look, here's the result? No, generally you can't, but it all does add up. And you really, if people will scream, democracy really works, just slowly.
Yes, indeed it does. We have gone very long here, my friend. Let us take a break. We'll come right back. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling and you right here at 77 WABC. WABC. John Gambling here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. One more question on the Washington and the oversight and the future in the presidential race. Vice President, would you be interested?
Vice president of my mother's shul in Medford, Massachusetts might be an attractive thing to focus on. Nobody's going to ask me, John, and I've got 671 days left to go in this job. And, you know, like I think that being the mayor of New York City is one of the most exciting things you can do because the problems, while difficult, are of a scale that you can get your hands around them. You can build a consensus, and we can make a difference. We have improved education. We have brought down crime. We are improving street cleanliness and, you know, the parks and all of these things. The economy here is better than it is elsewhere. We're going to get hurt by this national economy, make no mistake about it, but we are in better shape. And, you know, where this competition with London, they're real competitors, but we're doing okay. And then that, so that you can do something about the problems, but everybody around the world follows New York City. New Yorkers don't understand just how important New York is outside of New York and how much we have accomplished. I mean, sometimes we tend to be tougher on ourselves than I think we should be. People around this country, we're the model for public education, we're the model for bringing down crime. We're the model for, congestion pricing. The federal government wants to give us $354 million as a demonstration project because if we can make it work in New York, the rest of the country can copy. And that's true around the world. Every place you go, they you know, greening. America isn't exactly been as environmentally conscious as perhaps it should be, but in New York City, we've got Plan YC, and we announced the other day black cabs going to hybrids, and that'll lead delivery cabs a couple of years from now going to hybrids because they buy the cars from the black car drivers. And, you know, so I've got a great job, and I'm going to stick with the job, which is what I've said all along, and it's very flattering that people talk about other things, but... I was here last night. We had a reception for the state Senate, the Republicans and the Democrats. And I this morning had one of my two breakfasts this morning was with a group of assembly people. And I told both groups, I am not running for state Senate. I'm not running for the state assembly. I'm not running for governor. And in fact, the Room 9 press corps the other day, yesterday I guess it was, sent flowers to Kevin Sheekey saying, sorry that your candidate's not running.
So
Kevin's
assuming,
my political guy.
I would assume then, having heard what you said, that the a senatorial run is out of the question and not interesting.
Well, there's number one, at the moment there's no vacancy, and if you believe the polls, there might not be. I mean, Hillary's still in the race, but she's got a tough race ahead of her. Going into the Senate when you're 66 years old is not very smart, because in the Senate it's all seniority, and I'd be in my 90s before I had any real say there.
Listen here, you mentioned a couple of things I wanted to talk about. Let me, with just a couple of minutes here before the half hour, and we're going to have to break again, you mentioned town cars and the initiative to up the mileage there. I think the numbers I saw was 25 mpg by 2009 next year and 30 by 2010. You know what? I don't know if those things are achievable, but I like your short-term goals rather than, you know, 2020.
Well, you know, the Senate actually at one point, I don't know if they ever passed it, but they were talking about 2050 as a goal. If you do the math, nobody in the Senate or the House today will be in the Senate or the House in 2050. It's the ultimate leaving the responsibility to somebody else. Let me quickly tell you what we're doing with cabs. There are three kinds of cabs. There's yellow cabs where you flag them down and it's regulated heavily and you pay. You can pay in cash, and actually virtually all the drivers now are taking credit cards, and it turns out after all the fuss about, and that's two short strikes, today the cab drivers generally love it because they're all reporting what we said would happen. They're getting bigger tips. Maybe a little bit annoying, but the tips are bigger, so they're all signing on to this. But that's yellow cabs. Then there are the black cabs, which we'll talk about. Those are the ones that you have to have a voucher for. They're used by the big companies. You see them sitting with their motors running outside of the law firm or the Wall Street banking firm in Midtown or waiting at the airport for their clients to arrive. That's the black cars. And then the last is the livery cars. Livery cars, typically you can negotiate a fare, and they typically work outside of Manhattan where fewer yellow cabs go. We forced over 5 years because the yellow cabs to all go to hybrids. Why? Because because they have to, by law, turn over their cars. No cab can be more than 5 years old. So every year, roughly a fifth of the cabs, they have to replace them. Now they have to replace them with hybrids. They save about $5,000 on a car, on a cab, and generally the fleets are happy to do that. The black cabs is what we announced yesterday or 2 days ago. There, the problem is they'll save $5,000, and they really make sense because, remember, hybrids run on electricity rather than the combustion engine when they're idling, and they spend a lot of time, unlike the yellow cabs keep driving, the black cabs spend most of their time waiting, and so this would cut an enormous amount of pollution out, but it costs a lot more for them, and so we've come up with an innovative financing plan, and I think it was Deutsche Bank and Merrill Lynch that really did it together, so that the drivers will be able to finance. Will they do it? Sure, they'll want to do it because they save so much money after the first year. They've saved the extra cost of the car, and from then on, it's pure profit for them, and they like that. And then livery cabs, which are a lot less regulated, what do you do about them? Well, they typically, it's a much lower budget operation, and typically they're on their own. They buy the black cars after 5 years, and I think we have a six-year recycling program now, or a program where you have to turn over your black car within 6 years. So within 6 years, all the blacks will be hybrid, and then starting 7 years from now, the liveries will be buying the old hybrids from the black cars. So eventually, we're really going to make a big difference here.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we went real long the first time around. This break obviously is shorter. The time between breaks a little bit shorter. Let me do another one here on the half hour. We'll get back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you at 1-800-848-WABC. Your questions coming up before we're done. Coming up here, George Webb. WABC. We're sitting in with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. Friday get-together. Mr. Mayor, let's talk about what Mike Salvatorelli was just talking about, the economy. Lead story at the top of the hour, national news, the cost of things going up, up, up. Inflation is, showing its head here. What do you think?
There's something called stagflation, which is the worst of all possible worlds. Prices go up, but economic activity goes down. And we've had it before, and that's the great fear of a lot of economists. And if you take a look, commodity prices are going through the roof. Oil's at $102 a barrel. Wheat is trading at three times its record high up until a couple of days ago. And each of these things, those two things are because of a terrible energy policy in Washington. Corn ethanol is
a disaster.
Is a disaster. I've said that repeatedly. The science uses more energy than it generates. Number one. Number two, it forces the price of all of the foodstuffs that we eat and milk that we drink, everything through the roof, because corn costs a lot more because now farmers can sell corn to the ethanol manufacturers as well to the dairy farmers. And they can also, and then people also don't grow wheat because they can grow corn. And then that makes the price of wheat go up. Well, if the price of corn and wheat go up, price of milk goes up because the cows don't have any of the corn to eat, and the price of cereal goes up because that's where the wheat goes and bread and everything else. So that's one of the problems, that we are having inflation, and that's the Fed's problem. They keep saying, we've got to fight inflation. On the other hand, the politics, particularly in an election year, are to stimulate the economy. And I got criticized for saying that, we send out these checks. The bottom line is people are going to, I think, mostly use those checks to pay a little bit off their mortgage or just put it in the bank, and it's not going to stimulate the economy. On the other hand, the real problems of spending money we don't have, which is what spooks everybody, just continue. And you take a look at the national economy, it hasn't really hit badly here yet, but it will. There's no ways to believe that a national downturn doesn't affect New York to some extent. Now, we have a higher credit rating than most other municipalities, highest credit rating we've had in ever, I think, and 2 record credit increase. I think that's right. So our cost of borrowing money is lower. But the municipal markets, people are afraid to lend money because the monolines are all in trouble. And so our cost of funds goes up along with everybody else's. We're doing better than most. But still, it cost us something. Wall Street profits hurt our tax revenues. Real estate transactions can't finance, and all these big buildings have been sold. That's going to be less tax revenue. So it's not doom and gloom for us, but it is cause for concern. And I think you take a look at New Jersey. Corzine's recommended a budget where they're closing whole agencies. They've got a very big problem. Well, New York State's going to have to face the fact that our tax revenues are lower and everybody wants more services. And New York City has to do the same thing as well. And we have a program in where all agencies had to cut out 2.5%. And rather than cut their favorite program, I've asked them to cut a little bit out of every program. Because then nobody really gets hurt, but we do save the money. 5% they've got to cut for the next year, which starts, fiscal year starts July 1, and hopefully that'll be enough. But we have to balance our budget by law, and we will do that. And, the good news is we're in better shape than most. The bad news is anybody that thinks that we have extra money, have a surplus, or that those out-year deficits aren't cause for real concern is just making a mistake.
And not to focus on the national issue any longer than we already have, but this back to the beginning of our conversation this morning, and that ethanol, those that are running for the presidency continue to tout this as holy water.
Well, they did that when they were campaigning in Iowa. I don't know that they're doing it.
Well, we'll see what happens in Texas and Ohio.
It was if you take a look at the energy bill, I hate to keep coming back to that, but they turned it into an agriculture bill. And that particularly annoys me because most farmers don't get anything out of the agricultural help. All of the aid, or virtually all of it, goes to 10% of the farmers. And those are the big agribusinesses. They're not, you know, we all picture this little farmer with the spouse and the kids, and they all pitch in and they drive the tractor and plant the stuff and suffer when there's a drought. And, you know, it's the great American image, Norman Rockwell. But that's not where the aid goes. The aid goes to these big businesses, and so the energy bill addressed that. The energy bill did not, however, put in monies for innovative new energy forms, and that gets back to the mistake that Washington's making on jobs. They're trying to protect jobs. Protecting jobs is like trying to order the tides not to come in. You can't do that. What we have to do is to promote jobs and to get our labor force able to take those jobs. And if we don't, we're going to start, instead of people exporting jobs from here, other countries are going to export jobs to America, but they're going to be the low-paying jobs. So we've got to focus on, make the investment in education. We're trying to do it in New York, but we need it nationwide. And give incentives, tax incentives, or subsidies or whatever, to new industries. And we've got to get immigrants coming here with new technology. All this business is xenophobia. We don't want immigrants to come here. They're taking the greatest ideas elsewhere. And those are the jobs that we need for our people. And you see, in Detroit, they tried to protect the big three American automakers, and what's happened is close to half of the people that used to work in Detroit are in the automobile industry are now working elsewhere, either at lower-paying jobs in Detroit or have gone to other parts of the country. But the percentage of the cars that Americans buy that are made in America is going up. Why? Because some of the other companies from Korea and Japan have opened plants in America with new technologies, new innovations. We need those people to keep coming here and those companies and their capital to come and invest in America so that we can have the good, high-paying jobs that we want for our people. But just mandating high-paying jobs when it's the old-line jobs, all that means is those industries are going to keep going down, 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 either move away or just go out of business. And it's about as dumb a policy as you can have. We've got to promote, not protect. We've got to invest in education so that our workforce can do the jobs of tomorrow and not try to keep the jobs of yesterday here. Nobody can do that.
All right. 1-800-848-WABC is the telephone number. If you have got a question for the mayor, want to react to something that he has said, 1-800-848-WABC. Reports are that you are going to revise the grading system for the schools of the city of New York, changing criteria. Is this bowing to pressure?
No, I think it's, well, you can always say that, but look, John, you put in a plan, you see which parts work, you see which parts don't, and you see whether or not somebody's got a better idea than what you have, and if they do, you incorporate it. And I think there's a little bit of all of that in this, and I think, you know, the Department of Education is to be commended. You know, if the trouble we've got in our society, if you put something in and then you change it, oh, you failed or whatever. You didn't fail. Even if it didn't work, you didn't fail. You tried something, you learned what didn't work, and you go on. Here, the grading system has worked very well. The grading system tells the parents for the first time the quality of the schools they're sending their kids to and empowers them to then be able to have some facts so they can yell and scream, and that'll make us improve the system. Can you do a grading system that explains to parents which parts of schools are better and worse? Yes, and that's what they're trying to do. Can you, are there other ways to measure that may be fairer? Yes, that's what they're trying to do. But the fundamental idea here of grading schools and giving parents information that in the past, the bureaucracy and the elected officials said, oh, no, the public doesn't have that, shouldn't have that information. They're not smart enough to know what to do with it. I find that offensive, and we're not going to participate in that. We're going to plow ahead here and make sure that the teachers get the information about how well their students are doing. And to do that, you have to test. And then they can be even better teachers. Give it to the principals. They have to know where the supervision of their of the teachers is failing, and where they should go and redirect their efforts to help teachers that aren't doing as well as they could. If you don't measure it, you can't do that. And who, what teacher doesn't want to know where they can do a better job and doesn't want help from the more experienced principal? That's the principal's job, is to help them. And the same thing with parents, and the same thing with students. You got to tell students when they're doing well and when they're not.
All right, let me ask you about students. Report in the New York Sun rewarding students for going to school with cell phones and free minutes. And
it's I was sort of skeptical of the program, and it was scaled back. We don't allow cell phones in schools. We're not going to change that. But there is a company that wants to give students incentives, and the incentive instead of cash is free minutes on a cell phone that also has some other attractive features, they think, for students. And it's a small pilot program. And John, I'll try anything and see if it works. You know, we have this conditional cash transfer thing. Some parts of it, it's too early to tell. We have 2,500 families signed up, 2,500 families that are acting as a control group. It's worked elsewhere, and maybe it'll work here. Shame on us if we're not willing to try some of these things. And they do take a few years to find out whether they work, and let's see.
All right, what do you say to New Yorkers that starting this weekend and around the tri-state area on the first of next week, higher MTA and transit fares?
You know, the people that work in the transit system want to get paid. Everybody wants more security. Fuel at the MTA has to buy to drive those trains costs more, and that's just a fact of life. Mass transit is still a bargain. It's just a little bit less of a bargain. Nobody likes to have increased fares, but the alternative of worse service is a lot worse, and that the real problem we have with the MTA is not the fares. The real problem is that the MTA is going to come up with a budget of mass transit improvements for the next 5 years that's something close to $30 billion. And if we don't get congestion pricing passed, there's no money to do it. There's a hope and a prayer that the federal government will give us money. Yeah, well, we want money from the federal government for lots of different things, and we're just not going to get it for everything, and we're not going to get as much as we need. State government, you know, the state's going to have the same problems the city has of lower tax revenues and more demands on services as the economy turns down. State's not going to have any more money. The city, and we just talked about the city, and the city's already investing $2 billion in a new subway system, first time in decades, many decades, that the city is paid for a subway itself, which I would argue the MTA should be paying for. That was what the MTA was created for, but they aren't doing it, so we're doing it. So there's no other money. And what would happen to the city if we walk away from all mass transit improvements for the next few years? It really is hard to contemplate, because mass transit is, unless we improve mass transit, the strangulation of our economy is going to continue, and the pollution is going to continue, and the added greenhouse gas is going to continue.
I'd like to get into that whole pricing, congestion pricing thing. We don't have time. I need to take a break. We'll get to the phones. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. You and the mayor, going to be next. WABC. We continue here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And you, Mr. Mayor, we've got the folks on the line here. Let's start with Arthur in Manhattan. Arthur, get right to your question, please, for the mayor.
Hello, Mayor Bloomberg.
Hi.
What don't you like about being Mayor Bloomberg? I'll hang up and listen.
What don't I like? That's an interesting thing. There's very few things that I don't like about it. You know, sometimes when somebody said to me, where I was having dinner the other night, and a number of people came up to the table to shake hands and say good job and all that sort of thing, and they said, isn't it annoying that they're butting in while you're trying to have a quiet conversation with your girlfriend? And I said to myself, you know, yeah, it is, but I'd rather have them come up than not.
and be nice about it rather than come up and yell and
well,
scream.
Well, it's nice when people like the mayor, John, but I do remember the days when we first came into office and people weren't so happy and the polls were a little bit lower and everyone's not. The only person, the only one time somebody screamed at me on the subway and the doors were closing and this guy still on the train, big hulking guy, glared at me before the doors closed and he screamed at me, fix the Knicks.
Fix the Knicks. That's something the mayor can't do.
Not that.
And exactly so. That's going to take somebody else on that case. Carl in Brooklyn, you're with John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Carl.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your pragmatic and nonpartisan stewardship of our city.
I like this. Keep going. We're on a roll here, John. Two happy customers in a row.
Now, having said that, I understand that there's a logistic reason for keeping, like, Merrill Lynch, for example, in the city and offering them tax incentives. But how do you explain, for example, Major League Baseball and something like Yankees?
Carl,
you're breaking up, but I think I get the gist of what you're saying. Let me just quickly talk about sports. When I came into office, the city had an agreement with the Yankees and the Mets to build two new stadiums. The city owns Yankee Stadium. The city owns Shea Stadium. They were going to build two new ones and loan them and finance it on the city balance sheet and then rent them to the Mets and the Yankees. And I canceled those deals. The deals hadn't been signed, and I just said to both the organizations, look, I'm sorry. The city was willing to do it, but you never got it done, and things change. And we have to build schools and water tunnels and other things. We just can't do it. So what happened out of all of that was the Mets and the Yankees, each of the two organizations put $800 million dollars into building stadiums, which they will own. The city and the state, in my recollection, each put in $75 million or $150 for each of the two stadiums. I don't know about where the state is getting the money. From the city's point of view, it was a very good deal because we had obligations to fix up the existing Yankee and Shea Stadium of that amount or more. So it really cost us nothing. We really didn't put any money in that sense that wouldn't have had to do anyways. And where next year they're going to open a new Yankee Stadium and new Shea Stadium, and they're both going up. I've driven by both, and they're fantastic. The other deal with sports is we did agree to give some benefits to Major League Baseball, and I've always been against doing this kind of thing, but in this case, I think it's justified. 125th and Park, somebody was going to build a hotel there, and we had a big ribbon cutting or announcement. They didn't build it. Somebody was going to build an office building. Same thing. They didn't build it. We've got to get something going there. Major League Baseball is starting their own television network, has agreed to build a building there. We'll give them some benefits. They've agreed to employ, I think it's something like 350 or 400 employees to keep them employed for a long time. And we think that it will be enough of a catalyst for the whole neighborhood. And remember, we're rezoning all of 125th Street. So I think the extra tax revenues will make it a good investment for the city. But fundamentally, I think we should not, even for Merrill Lynch, as you mentioned, we shouldn't be giving tax breaks to companies to come here. We should be taking our money, bringing crime down, improving the schools, fixing the parks, cleaning the streets, all that sort of stuff. And that will get the people that they need to live here they need to work here will come to New York, and they won't have any choice. And incidentally, it is only $20-25 million for the Major League Baseball, which in the grand scheme of things is pretty small.
But I understand.
Generally, I don't like it. This one, I think, is justified.
Mr. Mayor, the theme is up behind us. That means that's it for today. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you next week.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you, sir. Coming up, we've got Chris Wallace, and you stick around at 77 WABC.